This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning. This is the December 14th meeting of the Revenue Expenditure Subcommittee meeting. I want to welcome everybody and thank you for taking the time to travel here to join us. It is anticipated to be a two-day meeting. We hope we can finish it in a day, but in an abundance of caution, we ask you to set aside a couple days for us. I want to start by taking roll of our subcommittee members. Starting with Sherry Carter.
Here.
Judge Good.
Here.
Judge Herman.
Here.
Judge Herman is here by phone. Thank you. Judge Lee. Judge Maragonda.
Here.
Judge McCabe. Judge Smith.
Here.
Rick Felstein.
Here.
Rebecca Fleming.
Here.
Jose Ian.
Here.
Mike Planet.
Here.
Brian Taylor. David Yamasaki.
Here.
And we also have some executive office staff here. Ms. Jody Patel is here. Mr. Kurt Soderlund is here. Zlatko Theodorovich is here. Lucy Fogarty is here. Stephen Chang is here. Colin Simpson is here. We've got everyone, and also the chair of the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, Judge Conklin, is here. And Judge Hawk from Riverside is here in the audience. Oh, sorry. We have Judge Slough and Judge Buckley, who are the co-chairs of the Judicial Council Technology Committee. Well, thank you for being here this morning. I'll pass this around for signatures. Judge Herman is on the line. We did not receive any public comment today, either written comment nor request to speak, so we can move through that. And then I'd like to approve the minutes of the November 12th Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee meeting. Those can be found on page 1 through 4 of your material. Excuse me. 1 and 2 of your materials. Is there a motion to approve those minutes?
I'll second.
Judge Maragonda moves. Is there a second? David Yamasaki second. Any discussion about the minutes? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, the minutes are approved. I was just going to jump right in, Sherry, to item 1, which is a discussion of the encumbrance report. Is there anything you want to say before we do that?
No, I think that we need to first find out the condition of our accounts, and then we can start talking about what we should consider after that.
All right. So I will turn it over to Zlatko and Colin.
And have Colin present.
Okay.
Good morning. Item 1. And this is the Trial Court Trust Fund and State Trial Court Improvement and Modernization Fund report on encumbrances, and this is through June 30th of 2015. This was at the direction of the Judicial Council, and what we provide before you are four tables. The first table, Table A, is actually what was directed by the Judicial Council. It's basically it's a detailing of the amount and purpose of the encumbrance, the name of the vendor or contractor, the equipment or services related to the encumbrance, and the estimated time frames for expenditure or disencumbrance. This is at the direction of the Judicial Council. So this is Table A. It's quite detailed, and you can find that on pages 8 through 51 of your package. We then provided two summary tables that were submitted to Judge Conklin as chair of the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee. The first was a summary table by fund, and you can find that on pages 52 and 53 of your package, and it's also listed as part of Attachment 1B. And then you can also see a summary table by fiscal year on pages 54 and 55. After review by the co-chairs of the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee, they suggested that we also provide a summary table by program and fund. And so that table you can find on pages 57 and 58, known as Attachment 1C. Of your package. So as relates to this item, we actually are requesting some feedback from the Revenue Expenditure Subcommittee beyond just informing them of the encumbrance information. Oh, and I'm sorry, I should provide one other detail. The savings information that was provided in this report, this was provided in early October, and is at that point in time. And these were conservative estimates based on only those items where the program felt very confident in the amount that they would have savings. So this is not meant to provide a full estimate of the savings related to these programs and their encumbrances. This was only meant to provide a floor or the minimum amount of savings that we would expect from these encumbrances and in point in time. These are conservative and at point in time. These are from October. So be aware of those two things. So beyond this information that we're providing, we are actually asking for some feedback from the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee, and that is two things. One is the current direction from the Judicial Council is that we provide a semi-annual report. The second report is provided March 31st. Now, if the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee feels that they need this information sooner, we would like to be aware of that because that would impact when we actually provide the information through. I mean, meaning as of January 31st, February 28th, and so on. We currently believe that if we do provide the report as of March 31st, then we could actually provide encumbrance information through February 28th to the Revenue Expenditure Subcommittee and still report on time on March 31st. So that's the only action that we're asking for information or feedback is regarding that report, and if you would confirm that is when you want the information. Because when we did provide the first report, we provided that through June 30th, even though we could provide it through August 31st, because they felt that that was an important milestone to report through June 30th, which is the end of the fiscal year, instead of the most current information available at that time.
So I'm just thinking out loud, which may not always be good in a public meeting, but we will have to get together again probably in February to solidify these recommendations after we get the governor's budget in order to take it to the Budget Advisory Committee in March. And I think it would be helpful to have an updated encumbrance report or at least an idea of where the encumbrances are at that point when we meet again in February. I don't know, so that would be, you know, through middle of January or end of January, whatever you can do. I don't know if that means we need to officially change the date that we get it. I guess my question is, are you able to do that?
Can I ask another question? Is there something magic about us meeting in February? Because the more information we have, the better we are, especially as it relates to savings. We talk about February. Is that because working backwards on when we give it to the council, we need to make sure it's at the proper Budget Advisory Committee, which means we need to meet in February?
Yes.
Is that right? So we don't have any? Okay.
We need to take it to the council in April, which means it needs to go to the Budget Advisory Committee in March.
Yeah, most of your savings on contracts you don't know until later in the year. So even if we meet in February and you got it through December or midway through January, you're going to still miss quite a bit of information for the last half of the year. That's when you really know whether your contracts and your expenditures are going to meet. So that's the only downside.
Yeah, so it's your call. If you want the information earlier, I guess there could be a couple of questions. One would be, is this in addition to the March 31st report, or would this be in place of?
In place of.
Right. And then the other question is it more important to have information when you meet in February, or is it more important to have information as of a certain date?
Well, I'm with you. I think we need it for our meeting, but in February, if we meet, say, early February, it's going to be as of December 31st, right?
Yes.
So you're suggesting we need March?
Well, I would rather have more information about our actual expenditure level so that we know what our savings are, but if we can't do it because we have to give it to the Trucker Budget Advisory Committee to review and consider before we give it to the council. So I think we're working backwards from that date.
We are. That's the problem. We're backwards from those dates. So the February or March have the same problem. I mean, Sherry raises a valid point, but that's not going to be resolved in February or March as far as knowing later on which
one's better. April, March, or meeting. Yeah, it would help
Can we work backwards from what our time, because I don't understand what the sequence and timing of who has to report to when, because I agree with Chair, I mean, locally, you know, we kind of do a temperature check at mid-year on where we are with coming, because it's really typically not until May, really, where we've got a good handle, at least locally, and I would assume the benefit, though, is correct me if I'm wrong here, though, with these encumbrances is that money can roll over. Yes?
In the fund?
No.
Yeah.
So no, you have not the expenditure, per se,
but the safe.
The funds cannot be re-encumbered without reallocation by the judicial council. Okay.
So, back on the rhythm, what's the sequence of the meetings? Because the later we can get to the information, I think we have an accurate
sequence or dates.
Both.
The budget advisory committee meeting is March 10th, and that's selected because there's a certain amount of time that they need to hold their meeting and then allow for the materials to be posted in time for the April council meeting.
April council meeting.
And we have to do the same for our subcommittee meeting because we post it and there's a time under the public record open meetings rule that we have to hold.
Okay. And what's the event at the April council meeting?
We take these recommendations in April.
For the council to act on what?
15-17 fiscal year for IMF.
Okay.
The only other thought I had is, and I don't know how onerous it is, so I'll defer to you, Colin, but if we certainly, I think, need it for our February meeting. We need an update. But you could also update the full budget committee in March, and I don't know if that gives us another month worth of numbers. I don't know. Or we could.
I don't think it's worth the effort. I'll be honest. It's a lot of work.
Okay.
It seems to me the worst-case scenario is that we roll money over that we hadn't anticipated. And then the Southport Trust Fund side, as Colin's going to explain, we don't run into a deficit problem until 16-17.
And we have a deficit, but we don't run into a negative fund balance.
Right. We have an operating deficit, but not a fund balance deficit. So rolling money over is not the worst thing in the world anyway. But I would say do it twice because it's a lot of work.
I would support that.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Do we have any data that suggests historically, if you estimate X number of dollars this early in the year, what your total savings are likely to be, what the percentage is, or is it just very, very much from year to year?
You know, it really depends. My experience is it depends on the contract, and it depends on the contract. Because usually you obligate what you think the contract will be, and then you can do better negotiations, or you can, you know, they're not going to get everything done, so you don't pay them because the milestones aren't met. So it's really, I haven't seen a ratio necessarily. But so could we agree that that Colin prepares the material for our February meeting, and then we would have to look at it for the following fiscal year?
Yeah, I think so.
Because the worst thing that will happen, we'll just carry money over, which we need anyway.
Second that motion.
And I'm not sure that we need the full encumbrance report like you prepared this time, Colin. Right? I think just the spreadsheet, just the summary, the spreadsheets, I think.
But they have to do the big work to roll it up in a summary.
Right,
I mean,
right. We don't necessarily need it to display it for you, but they will actually need to get into the details to give you the summary.
So we want to make it more encumbrance. More, and then you can tell us what you want.
Okay.
Well,
with
skip A, A's two details, right? Is anybody here, did you read A and just really cherish it, or you'd like to see it on the agenda?
The one thing, though, is that is the direction of the council.
Oh,
table,
yeah.
A is the one that actually is asked for by the council. B, C, and D are the ones that weren't asked for.
You're rolling it up. It's the same data.
But they're asking for the detail. They actually say that, you know, by each encumbrance. And so that's why we provided table A, is because they said by each encumbrance. So I'm not sure if that's a compliance issue or not. We don't know. I'm not going to comment on that. But I just wanted to let you know the reason why we provided that was because that was what was required.
Well, that's centralizing. There's information there for transparency purposes.
Sure.
Where the money is being spent on.
Yeah, we're damned if we do and we're damned if we don't.
We don't
have enough information to criticize.
You know what? Include that really interesting report.
We'll make it the last table.
Yeah, there you go.
So the summary information is first, and then we'll make the detail last. When do you want this? You want this for the February meeting?
In lieu of.
This is an action item, and it is to approve a recommendation of when to provide the report. A is by September 30th of each year. Am I right?
That's the council action.
What's your recommendation?
Their options are at the bottom of page 3 and the top of page 4.
Thank you.
So do we want it submitted by January 31st?
When are you meeting? I think that would be the question. If you're meeting in February, most likely we wouldn't be able to provide, we'd only be able to provide you through the end of December.
I think we'll meet probably the first or second week in February is my guess. We can talk about that before we adjourn.
That would probably be the end of December.
And I just have one question, and maybe it's, is there magic to the April Judicial Council meeting? Is that because it allows the Judicial Council staff time to adjust to a new budget in case there's downsizing?
Yeah,
because, you know, really the solution would be to do the May meeting and have a larger chunk that we could look at. But
No, April and June are pretty solid
okay,
in terms
got
of
it. So
council
April.
Meetings. Yeah.
I don't think there's a May council.
Nope.
And that explains that.
What should this be?
So the date should be if the report system on February 1st. Colin, is that what you're thinking? So page 3, item 1, you want to change March 31st to February 1st?
Sure.
Anyone disagree?
And it would be through the month of December.
That's correct.
Well, which is kind of your recommendation number 2. Okay. It'll reflect the status of incumbencies through December 31st, though.
Right.
So is that a motion, Sherry?
Yes, I think my second is it.
With that change in the language, is there any further discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
All right. Thank you. Item 2 is consideration of 2016-17 allocation options for various programs funded from the Child Court Trust Fund. Before we get there, I just wanted to have a conversation a little bit about how we approach this. We're going to get an update on that, obviously, on the fund conditions and where we are for 16-17. I would also ask that we understand where we are for 17-18, just so we have that in the back of our mind. But last year, many of you were on the subcommittee when we met for a couple of days and had a significant deficit that we were facing. And I wanted to remind those who were here and for those who weren't, the group kind of settled on some guiding principles on how we approached making reductions. And those guiding principles appear on page 165 of your materials. And I wanted everybody just to take a look at them and see if everyone is comfortable kind of adopting those principles as we move forward, if there's ones that you want to take off, if there's other considerations you think we need to make.
We thought it was really important at the meeting last year when we were facing the $11.5 million deficit that we not consider our own individual courts. And so by creating these principles, we would remind ourselves when we would get down and say, well, my court, no, we're not talking about my court, we're talking about the branch. So we thought we would remind ourselves of what these principles were. What's that? Sure. Let me read them, and in case anyone wants to modify them, change them, add to them.
So the first one was, and this was primarily for the IMF, whether or not the programs or projects are mandated, either by statute or in some other way. We thought that had to be considered because if we were looking at either reducing or eliminating, we needed to know whether or not they were mandated. So do we agree that's something that we should consider?
I had a question about what other ways?
Primarily we looked at the statute. If it was self-imposed, we considered that too.
Self-imposed.
Well, if there was a rule that
courts did X, Y, and Z, or someone did X, Y, and Z, we wanted to know what the rule was to see if it was something that we could go back to the council to reconsider.
Sherry, what page was this again in the materials?
165. We also thought that since the funds were for the branch, we wanted to consider the number of courts that were served, thinking that if it was a valuable program, it should benefit all 58 counties, and as a preference, because the money is on behalf of all the trial courts. And Judge Smith, you were there, right? So help us.
Well, I'm just going to say, I think the subtext of that conversation was also balancing interests to smaller and larger courts.
Sure.
You know, there's some programs in big courts that work well, but the small courts don't get the benefit of those services, and so that was just part of that conversation. So it wasn't just sheer numbers, but also the sizes and the geographic locations of the courts that we were talking about as well.
We also considered the value to the court and the branch according to the survey results, and so you'll see that we'll at some point today or tomorrow go through survey results to see if that's something that could be considered. We did rely on that last year. The appropriateness of the IMF as the fund source, whether or not it fit within the context of what IMF was originally designed for, and whether or not it felt like it was something that should be funded from IMF.
Let me add to that. That was a hard conversation.
That was.
And because a lot of it was, well, what are we going to do if we're not, if all of a sudden we're sort of really looking at the original concept of the IMF and they're really important programs that are maybe eliminated, what are we going to do? And I recall that we didn't stop the conversation at whether or not it was appropriately funded from the IMF based on the original concept, but that we sort of parked some of the ideas and some of the programs that were like critical, but just not within the IMF, and sort of decided to consider them a little differently. I tried to figure out how we might fund them. How they may get funding from another state.
Right. There were several, and in fact, when we get to the IMF, we'll discuss it, that we funded one time to go off to see if other groups or other, they could be funded in other ways. And I think of all of our suggested considerations, only one was actually approved. So I think $2.9 million is coming back. So,
could I add
Thank you.
A bit more. That discussion also, we open it up to ask, this original project may have been approved or there was a legitimate long-term view, but is it still viable as an IMF project? Technology was the biggest issue that we said, you know, are we doing this because, you know, way back then we decided to do this, and now we abandoned CCMS, but we still have CPTC. And then we talked about, well, how do we, you know, break it apart to look at value?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the biggest discussion that we never came to a conclusion, but that was kind of what shaped our discussion around, is the IMF still the source that should
some of the things that are funded out of IMF that don't seem to fit, we actually had Judicial Council staff do some research, and the reason that they're with IMF is because they originated when there were two accounts, and it was part of a BCP that was funded out of one of those two accounts, and when they merged, it doesn't feel like they would fit there, but they were the original funding source before the two were merged. David, you were there. Anything you want to add so far?
No, I'm supporting all the suggestions of the dialogue.
Okay. And then the last one was the impact program and project funding reductions that would have on individual courts. This is kind of what Judge Smith had talked about, that if it's not all 58 courts, then what impact would there be, and is there a replacement or another way to do the service? Last year we had an $11.5 million deficit. This year is not going to be hopefully quite that bad. So anyway, anything you want to add or reconsider? David's thinking. Go ahead.
Well, one of the things that I want to just bring up is the discussions and decisions that were made last year, extremely difficult, and many of the courts sustained service
Every court did.
But the solution was not just limited to reducing activity or expenses for the court. I think there was a focus on the agency and types of the council operation. And that's reflected here. I know that many of the changes ensued following the discussion that we had, and a lot of changes were made as well. But the funding source was the IMF.
Right. Are you using, for example, some of the things that we funded one time in nature and now are coming back?
Right.
I'll give you one example. The regional staff was one that we funded one time in nature because they do exactly the same functions as staff that is in San Francisco. And so the point was we thought that there were certain things that fit a core central office responsibility regardless of from which location they perform that service. And the Judicial Council has said they don't have the funding to pay for it, and so it's coming back to us this year to consider as one of the line items. So that's one example of something that we funded one time in nature and have now been told there isn't an alternate funding source, so we'll have to prioritize it with everything else.
So where are you all with, is this something that you want to try to adhere to, these guiding principles? Do you think they're helpful? Do you think they're not helpful?
We just kind of committed ourselves at the time. I feel that when we started down this path and the way we approached the cuts, I think switching gears now and reconsidering these would be a mistake, only because we're sort of shifting gears in the middle of the process and we're there. And I think they're good guiding principles. I mean, individual courts couldn't be considered. But I thought that
it kept us cleaner.
It kept us much cleaner.
I agree with Judge Smith. There was a lot of time spent on formulating these principles. And the back and forth that we went through, I think, given where we are looking towards 17-18, this is what I need to keep this in mind.
Rick?
As a newbie to the committee, I think they make a lot of sense, and I think for they actually agree. I did want to ask, though, about the number of court services, because I'm kind of hearing a little bit two different things. Is it all courts, or is it just a large number of courts, or is it the number of courts that are really in need? You know, how did you focus that in the past?
So one of the questions, we actually had a lot of discussion around principles, and we wrote them on the board and had a lot of dialogue. So those of us who experienced that last year, and Judge Schley, you were co-chair, so you feel free to jump in any time. but we had a lot of dialogue about what it meant. The preference is, I think, the preference was that when we're using branch money towards the branch, meaning all trial courts as a preference. But there might be reasons why it might not work out that way. And so when it says to consider the number of courts served, if it's two or three, there has to be a question on, well, how much is it, and does it make sense to do it that way, or is there a gliding path off into some other alternative method? So it wasn't like a hard and fast rule that would scratch through it if it wasn't all 58, because you can see we still have a lot of programs that don't do that. But it clearly, I think, was almost the preference that they're branch money, we should serve the branch, and if it's an important, valuable service, we should talk about how we would serve all 58 or have a glide path off for those courts that don't, or some other way. So it wasn't I can't say, Rick, that there was it wasn't one was more important than the other. It kind of depends on the service.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that, kind of looking at it a little bit more on a case-by-case basis. It does make sense to me that you try and benefit absolutely as much as possible throughout the state. But there might be cases with the one board that it just doesn't make sense for them to do it themselves in that manner, and they may need some centralized funding.
But I'm going to be direct with you.
Yeah.
You're right. But the question is, should the rest of us pay for it? And that's really the question, is should the IMF money pay for it, which really is branch funds, or should there be another way for small courts to pay their share from some other method?
And that's always worth
it. Right. So that's what we're talking about.
I just didn't want it to be black or white.
And exactly. Right.
Okay.
David?
So this is Jim Herman. Just a question, because I obviously didn't participate in the formulation conversation. Is this the priority of the factors for the factor analysis? Are the factors cumulative? How are they applied? Are they just simply high level things to keep in mind as we look at various programs?
Judge Herman, this is Judge Earl. They really are kind of high level guidelines. They're not listed in any particular order. But we did, the group did find themselves last year when going through this exercise when there was a program that was being reviewed, is to look at these principles to ask the question, is it a mandated service? How many courts do they serve? Is it appropriate that the IMF fund it? So we kind of ran through those questions with each program when we talked about it, but they are really kind of high-level guidelines.
To keep us out of looking at my court, that was really, we needed,
right.
It isn't just about us representing our courts, but how we're going to solve the problem for the branch.
It makes sense. It wouldn't be just, we find the program is mandated, and therefore we endorse it and then move on. Is it mandated? Then look at the other factors as well in terms of making a decision.
Yes.
Okay.
From Trauffer Budget Advisory, where these recommendations will go, I think these give the recommendations of this subcommittee tremendous credibility. So when you go to Trauffer Budget Advisory and say, this is what governed our decisions, I think it really goes a long way to making that the members of which we all are and will be making recommendations gives great security, I guess is the best word, in considering those recommendations.
David, and then Jessica.
Yeah, I just wanted to provide two examples that might put into context where we had to evaluate this particular principle, and that is complex civil lit, which was made available to six different courts, although many courts were generating complex civil lit fees. That was seemingly an imbalance in how the monies were distributed. The other example is CCPOR. There's a larger level of participation, and I mean, that was one of those things that, although it wasn't 58, it was a large number, and the underlying issue was public safety. So I mean, that was kind of a mitigating a factor that's actually probably will be considering it again this year. But it kind of puts into perspective six versus whatever.
20. Yep.
Is there any discussion about the value of long-term stability? Because we seem to be on an ideal year. Last year there were severe cuts. This year maybe not so much. Next year we're looking at a big hole again. That seems to be government will not want to consider. It's just what the impact is across years rather than just year to year.
Could I just take this opportunity to say I'm so glad you're on this committee, Bishop? yes, the way it was explained last year is we don't want to keep kicking the can down the road. And we discussed that quite a bit, and we tried very hard to make lasting change, and in fact eliminated many programs which are ongoing. We got a spreadsheet, you don't have it, but I do, that talks about, it was from last year, which ones were one-time cuts and ongoing cuts. We're trying hard to do that. The biggest vacillating factor that causes us heartburn is Lanwin. And one of the discussions we're going to have after lunch today is Lanwin, and the reason is because the way that we've been buying in Zlatko, stop me if I don't get it exactly right. Where did he go? Stop me if I don't get it 100% right. But because we've been buying the hardware in chunks, when the life cycle hits, we're up here, and then when things are okay, we're down here, and so on. And we're going to talk a little bit about ways that could perhaps be smooth so that we have a smoother allocation, because the big vacillating factor is really our Lanwin, which every court supports, every court now benefits. It probably fits all of these things, but the vacillating nature of the expenses is based on the cycle, the life cycle of the equipment.
So, Jessica, I think, are you suggesting that maybe another factor to consider would be the impact on the end of the
what I'm trying to get at is the idea that we not courts on a yo-yo.
Yeah.
And that as we make decisions, we think in terms of what it's going to look like across years as opposed to just that given year.
Yeah.
Because we can make sensible decisions year to year, but the effect of them could be to make a lot of difficulty for courts implementing. That's all I'm saying.
We didn't make a lot of one-time elimination of programs. The programs that were eliminated last year are gone now. So I think the hard part last year is that we eliminated things and there weren't a lot of substitute alternatives for the courts that were relying on some of the programs that were eliminated. And I don't know this year, I'm looking at the program, but those primarily did not come back. Those are gone now. Well,
so it sounds like implicitly it was considered.
It was.
Okay.
It was implicitly and explicitly.
Okay.
We did both, but probably not to the degree that we would have liked.
And I think the biggest area that this discussion ensued was the technology. The certain decisions were made, well thought of, and now that we changed certain strategies and now that the costs are going up, how do we maintain this long-term, you know, stable funding so that we don't find ourselves with the spikes that, you know, make the reductions to the top cost funds?
I think what Judge Gibbs is referring to, and if I'm off base, let me know, but I think one example that was fall into your concern was that we did not fund HR investigations. I think that would be an example that courts would not be able to use the IMF to pay for those kinds of things. So courts didn't find out until later in the year that that's something they would have to start paying for, and that didn't give trial courts much time that we're using that service. And I'm looking at the list of things we might have to look at this year, and there might be a couple that will talk about that too.
Any other thoughts on the guiding principles? Is there a motion to adopt them moving forward?
Second.
Second is Rebecca Fleming. Judge Smith moved. Any further discussion? All in favor of adopting the guiding principles, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. So I am going to turn it over to Zlatko and Cohen to kind of give us an update on and where we are.
So for item two, there are three recommendations. I'll go over the background context in a second, but just to give you an initial introduction, there are three recommendations, two of which, recommendations one and three, are basically they're a continuation of the 15-16 allocations, and then for recommendation two, we provide two options.
Can I remind people what page you're on in case?
I'm sorry. So starting on page 59. And I will go through the page numbers here. Thank you for reminding me, Sherry, because I always forget.
Okay.
So starting on page 59, and so we'll provide some context here as related to the condition of the child court trust fund before we get into the recommendations themselves. So basically there are two stories to tell as it relates to the child court trust fund. One relates to a decision made by the Revenue Expenditure Subcommittee, then the Child Court Budget Advisory Committee, and then Judicial Council, related to a transfer that was made in prior years from the State Child Court Improvement Modernization Fund to the Child Court Trust Fund of $20 million. That transfer was discontinued in 1560. That's $20 million that is no longer coming to the Child Court Trust Fund. Also as part of that decision, the costs for the V3 case management system were shifted from the Child Court Trust Fund to the State Child Court Improvement Modernization Fund. That was, at the time, roughly an estimated cost of about $6.3 million. So it basically netted the Child Court Trust Fund a decrease in available funds of about $13.7 million. So that is the context of as it relates to the situation that the Child Court Trust Fund is in now. Now, that situation has changed slightly, and I would like to point you towards page 60, table 1. This basically talks about that deficit. The net deficit amount you see at the top, $13.7 million, is based on those decisions made. But that deficit has changed slightly based on whether or not you include or exclude certain assumed savings related to judicial compensation savings based on judgeship vacancies. So that current estimate of adjustments is between $5.6 million and $2.4 million. And therefore, we have a
deficit of either $11.3 million instead of $13.7 million if we exclude judicial compensation vacancy savings, or $8.1 million, which is what we include currently in our fund condition statement, we assume currently, because it's a low vacancy rate. It's roughly around 2% or so. So it's a reasonable assumption related to vacancies. But that number can change very quickly, so that's why we provide scenarios where we include and exclude it.
And Colin, is the 2% vacancy rate, you say it's low.
Right.
Do you feel comfortable, does staff feel comfortable with that vacancy rate and including the basically one-time savings as part of the plan?
So as it relates to current years, yes, as it relates to historical vacancies from fiscal year 2001-02 through fiscal year 14-15, yes, that the vacancy rate is actually lower than the historical vacancy rate. However, there have been periods, typically in an election year, where the vacancy rate has dipped below that. So in general, yes, we feel comfortable with it. But as well as assuming it ongoing, there are going to be points where where that vacancy rate may actually be lower than what our assumption is. And again, it seems to be tied to election years. So that is something to be aware of, but we do feel it's conservative from a historical perspective. So based on that, so if you actually go to page 69, we actually have a fund condition statement for the Trumper Trust Fund, and it goes out to fiscal year 1920. I'm not looking at it, so I'm trying to remember. 2021. Now, that's not necessarily as important because as relates to projecting out our revenues, we only went out through fiscal year 17-18 and then held it constant from there. And we also made some assumptions in there that I'll talk about. But what you'll see is in 15-16, if you are looking at row 45 of column E, if you're looking at column E, you'll see that the projected fund balance is $23.6 million. So that sounds very good, but actually what's more important is if you look at the unrestricted fund balance, and that's on row 34. So row 34 is the fund balance, row 43 is the unrestricted, and you'll see for 15-16 it's about $9.2 million. Now that's a good thing because in 16-17 we're actually projecting a net deficit, and it's basically close to that amount that we were just talking about, the $8.1 million, about 8.3. Now, it's not 8.1 because there are certain revenues, the timing of those revenues, the way they come in and when they're allocated differs slightly, so that's why you won't see for each year it being $8.1 million. It's because of that slight variation. But it's $8.3 million in 16-17, which brings, and because of that and some prior year savings, in 16-17, and I'm sorry, as it relates to the deficit, you'll see that on row 45. So the three key rows when you look at the fund condition statement are rows 34, that's the fund balance, row 43, that's the unrestricted fund balance, and row 45, and that's the net revenue expenditures. So if it's a negative number, it means that our expenditures in that year are higher than that current year revenues, and that's obviously not a good thing. Now, because we have some prior year savings and because we have that unrestricted fund balance from 15-16 of about $9.2 million, we still come out of 16-17 with a positive $1.6 million in unrestricted fund balance. However, in 17-18, because that deficit continues, we then go negative. So we do have a deficit in 16-17, but we have a positive fund balance. So, therefore, we don't necessarily need to address that deficit immediately in 16-17, but if you want to be proactive in addressing that shortfall, it may be something you want to consider currently to address it in the long term. So that's just something to be aware of. Something to be aware of and something to consider whether or not you want to address it now or if you want to address it next year.
So, Colin, would you remind the new members where we get our revenues from?
So our revenues come from a few different sources. The largest revenue stream is from the general fund transfer. The second largest is actually from the county maintenance effort obligations, expenditure, and revenue. It's roughly $650 million or so. and they're fixed in statute. And then from there, we also have civil revenues, and then we have some criminal revenues, and then we have some additional revenues such as parking penalties and other items that make up a few percent of the revenue for the Trafford Trust Fund, but we're still talking about tens of millions of dollars. You can actually see a detailing of the most significant revenue streams on rows five through eight, I guess, would be the most significant. But you also see the other revenue streams on rows 9 through 12. And then the general fund transfer is listed on rows 13 through 15. And it's broken up into three rows for a reason. The reason is this. There's the main general fund transfer, but also because of our revenue shortfall over the past couple of years, the governor has decided to backfill that shortfall with general fund money to the extent that we have that shortfall, meaning if our revenue picture improves, they don't provide us as much general fund. We don't just get a surplus general fund. It's just to the extent that we have that shortfall. The other general fund transfer relates to the fact that the court-appointed dependency council is now its own appropriation item. So it's considered a separate general fund transfer. So that's why we have three general fund transfer items. So you can see all that detail there if you're curious about it. And they're basically ranked in the amount for the revenues, and then the general fund transfers are below that.
And Colin, you expect these numbers to be exactly the same. You've projected all the same numbers for the transfers, dependency, backfills through 2021.
So as it relates to the revenues, so the numbers change, right? They actually do change in 16, 17, and 17, 18. The numbers are different, except for, of course, the MOE. The MOE is fixed in statute. But the other revenue numbers change. Now, the general fund transfer amount we keep constant because, well, we actually reduce it slightly from 15, 16 to 16, 17 because the Prop 47 funding at $26.9 million is one time. But we keep that constant because we assume that any increase in the general fund transfer will be allocated. So since we don't know what that is, we don't want to assume an additional general fund transfer because all we would do is just assume an additional expenditure allocation to the courts, right? So the net impact of the Trafford Trust Fund is the same. So we just don't make any assumptions related to that because from the perspective of trying to project what the impact or the condition is on the Trafford Trust Fund, it would have no impact. So, but as it relates to the revenues, we actually do have different amounts through 17-18. It's just from 18-19 through 2021 that the amounts do hold constant. We don't project out farther than that because basically right now the revenue picture is changing, and so we feel that if we did make those projections, they really wouldn't have a lot of value because but probably 3 years from now that picture is going to change. So if we do a five-year revenue projection, unless there's some benefit to us doing that projection that's going to help us in some way, then we don't feel we should project out that far. And also, because we assume that currently the governor is backfilling any shortfall, that to continue to project that doesn't actually provide any benefit as it relates to trying to understand the picture or the condition of the trial court trust fund. Okay?
Mr. Good, I had a question.
In testing this negative 8.279 at the bottom,
right.
I noticed that the first thing is you're assuming that there's no increase in our general fund transfer, i.e. our budget this year. We don't know that, of course, for general fund, what the governor's going to propose.
Right.
Is that right? You're just holding it steady?
Right. And it's for the reason we just explained is that. Okay. Is that, yeah.
And then your civil assessment number goes down, but only a little. Have you been tracking what's happening with civil assessments?
Right. No, well, so the thing is you're talking about for 16, 17?
I'm talking about for 16, 17.
Right. So what you'll notice, though, is for 15, 16, when you compare it to 14, 15, the number drops significantly, and that's because the amnesty program is down this year.
Right.
So there are 9 months of the amnesty program in 15, 16, and 9 months of the amnesty program in 16, 17. So we've already assumed that drop in 15, 16, so that's why you don't see much of a change in 16, 17. But what you will see is in 17, 18, the number for civil assessments climbs back up.
Which is scary, because it may be gone at that point.
Okay.
We don't know.
That is possible. That is possible. Yeah.
My question is, you indicated that when there's a shortfall, the general state general fund makes up a certain amount, right?
And right. It's our projection.
Right. So does that impact all shortfalls in the state revenue? Is that completely off the table?
No.
Okay.
because any revenues that don't support court space allocations and civil assessments are not one of those, because those are distributions back to the court. The governor does not backfill those. They only backfill the revenues that support court space allocations. So, say your fees return dollar for dollar. If those drop, they would not backfill those. So those impact the court, but it's not based on
the bottom line there.
It's not the bottom line on line number 45,
mm-hmm.
which shows deficit of 16.7279.
Right.
That is a factor in the fluctuation.
It factors in only those things that basically would not. So for the case of civil assessments or fees returned dollar for dollar, if we project a lower revenue, we also project a lower allocation. So that doesn't impact the trust or trust fund.
Right.
Now, if it relates to the base allocation, however, if we project a decrease in our revenue, unless there is a reduction allocated to the courts, it's a deficit because the allocation amount remains the same, but the revenue decreases. So it takes that into account in the sense that we're assuming fewer amounts, fewer dollars are going to the court.
Any other questions? Okay, so that's the fund condition statement. Now, as it relates to the first recommendation, actually the first recommendation takes into account three different appropriations. It takes into account the judicial council, which relates to judicial council staff. Trial court operations relates to programs that are maintained by judicial council staff on behalf of the trial court. And this is, you can look at pages 63 and 64 on table 3. We'll provide you with a listing of the items that are being recommended. But also, when I get into this, we'll also be looking at page 70. Hang on, I feel like I'm skipping something here. Oh, that's the description. So, yeah, getting back to the recommendation, that is on page 61. So the recommendation and rationale is on 61 and 62, and then we actually provide on pages 63 and 64 an itemization of the recommendations 1 and 2, and I'm going to take up recommendation 1 because recommendation 1 and recommendation 3, those are continuations of 1516 allocations, and they only provide a single option. And then I'll get into a discussion of recommendation 2. So recommendation 1 is for $128.308 million. And these are four programs under judicial counsel, trial court operations, and support of operation of trial courts, meaning allocations to the trial courts for reimbursement. And these are programs that are either supported by statutorily designated revenues. And an example of that would be Thriver, for example. Appropriate a specific amount for appointed dependency counsel, or have no impact on the trial court trust fund balance. And these would be programs where courts are charged for the services provided, such as some of the costs related to CCTC. So that is recommendation 1. And you'll see that in 63 and 64. You'll see a column that says rec number 1, 2016-17, estimated restricted revenue report reimbursement. We provide this item separately because we feel that because these items are either statutorily designated, they're appropriated, or have no impact on the trial court trust fund, the decision related to this is relatively clearer for the subcommittee. Along with that is recommendation 3, which is basically just an addendum related to a specific allocation that's jury. And basically all it's asking is that if the allowable jury expenditures for the jury reimbursement program exceed the amount of the allocation, at the end of the year, judicial counsel staff make an adjustment so that each court receives the same share of the allocation as their share of the statewide allowable jury expenditures. So that's recommendation 3. Now, as it relates to the items contained.
So, Darren, can you have questions?
Sure.
I think 3 is a really clean one to start with because it's statutorily restricted in how it can be used. So first it covers jury expenses, and then if there's any extra, it goes to the courts for
jury, there's language in the statute.
Actually, they're under recommendation too.
Oh, that's two.
Yeah. So jury is actually under recommendation too, because they're not statutorily restricted. That one could actually be adjusted and has been adjusted by this subcommittee in the past. It was actually reduced by $1.5 million last year. But
we had to go back to the council and do that because it was
restricted.
Because it's restricted money, right?
Not that one. It has to go to the council because it's an allocation. So they all have to be allocated by the council.
So which is the account for jury that does go back to the trial court that we had to go back? It is restricted funds. Would that be in one? Remember, where's Steven?
It's IMF.
Oh, on IMF. Okay.
Jury one.
Oh, the jury one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so
okay.
That's where it is. Okay.
So I can talk about the descriptions for these programs, but it sounds like you want to jump right into the
well, I'm just wondering, rather than lump all three together, if you want to talk about each one separately, because, for example, why don't we take one and see if anyone has questions on recommendation number one first.
And the description for these programs
right.
can be found beginning on page 71.
So page 70 is for program 30, so the Judicial Council and the Trial Court Operations. You can find that on page 70, beginning on page 70. And then for the program 45, 10 items, beginning on page 79 and 80, you can find that there. And so that's the one thing I was going to actually highlight as well is that as it relates to the 45, 10 items, and I'll get into that, I guess, when I talk about recommendation two, there are quite a few items that you're not considering at this time, and we provide an explanation for why those items are not considered at this time on column F of the attachments. Found on page 79. So pages 79 and 80, you'll see the items for revenue expenditure subcommittee consideration under column E. And then you'll see a column F, which actually provides an explanation for the items not considered. Quite a few of these is because it's still pending. The Budget Act has not been enacted. Or there's Judicial Council policy already in place. Or statutory reasons.
So the first set of programs is the Judicial Council, now 0140010, and those programs that are fall under that category, right? And I think your point, Colin, was these are either statutorily restricted or there's designated funding that comes to them. Is that correct?
The items under recommendation one, yes. But the descriptions, just to be clear, there's some mixing there because when we have the descriptions for program 30 and the descriptions for program 4510, we're mixing the items that are under recommendation one and the items that are under recommendation two. So that's why I would recommend you look at page 63 and 64 to see that distinction so you know which programs relate to which.
Still there.
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't impact fund balance because they're restricted.
That's the bottom line.
Any questions for Colin on this one?
I just have one question, Colin, and I'm going on page 63 when we talk about Phoenix HR.
Yes.
Where would you say they fall in the recommendations?
Those are programs that have no impact on the Tropical Trust Fund fund balance because those costs are charged to the courts.
Where do the costs go that the courts do not reimburse for? The
IMF.
Okay. All of them.
Okay.
So are the consultants that Martin's hired looking at the HR component of Phoenix, do you know? Okay. Because much of the cost on running the HR component is built in because we're using Phoenix Financial. So some of the costs are fixed. But there are some costs that we would save by some courts using that component. But you're saying it's all an IMF. There's not any here because there's slivers of there's staff. So, for example, in the material that, thank you, that I received late, there are staff that support the HR component. Wouldn't they also be on the chocolate trust fund side?
No, there are actually some staff. I mean, this is all staff, that 1.349.
Right.
But there's specific support staff. There are some other staff related to the architecture, like IT staff that support it, that are funded out of the IMF or potentially the general fund. I don't have all the details on that, but that
so
they're not.
So, like, there's 41 in admin and COE. There's 10 of the 41 that are dedicated to HR module. Would that still be IMF and not chocolate trust fund? Or
I think the COE would not be Chopper Trust Fund. I think the module, though, I believe is the Chopper Trust Fund.
Okay. So this is the one area that kind of goes to the principles a little bit, and why we don't need to solve it for next year. It might be something that we want to talk about for the year after when we're looking at a deficit, because it started out small and it's grown a little bit, but we don't have the money to expand it, and the question is whether or not it's the right solution for the courts that are on it, because I think it's kind of buried between both. And there's a potential savings on both the IMF side and the Trump Court Trust Fund side.
Is this something that you think maybe there's just more work that can be done to flush out what the impact is to the trust fund than we talked about in February?
I do, if it's something that the group thinks we should look at. I mean, it's one of those where I don't know if has Martin got a position on this HR component? I mean, it's some of it will be fixed because part of it's part of our licensing for the Phoenix, but there are people buried both in the trust fund side and the IMF side that support it, and there could be alternatives that would be less expensive.
So the IT consultants that we have hired have raised some questions that Martin and I and Millicent have started a dialogue on. That will impact or could possibly impact the HR component.
Okay.
What we do in the future, I don't know that we'll have a response to that by like February, but
yeah.
But that wasn't the focus of their their review, but they did take a look at it. They have some thoughts and ideas for Martin's consideration. We just had our first discussion about it last week, last Wednesday.
What would you suggest, Jody? Because it does feel like one of those that maybe we should understand more as we're facing a trust or trust fund deficit as well as an ongoing IMF problem. Should we wait until the consultants are finished, and do you have an idea of when that would be?
Yeah, the consultants will be done in the next, like, maybe 60 days. By the end of January is what I anticipate, because their contract ends by then anyway.
Okay, yeah.
And then between now and probably early spring, I think Martin will probably have an idea of where he's going with that. So if you wanted to
hold on,
but sometime this fiscal year for sure.
Okay. Because there's a lot of people buried on the Trucker Trust Fund side too. So.
Well, on the Trucker Trust Fund side, no. So on the Trucker Trust Fund side, all the people that are actually in the Trucker Trust Fund are fully supported by charges of Trucker Trust. So any trial court trust fund related positions are paid for by the trial courts. There aren't any positions that are paid for by the trial court trust fund. They're not reimbursed by the trial courts.
$1.349 million.
That's correct.
Which is the HR payroll.
That's the shared services component.
Right.
Fully reimbursed.
But I thought you said that the people on the admin and COE line would be trial court trust fund.
I thought that those might be the reimbursed positions.
They're separate from general fund. I've got a little. Okay. So anyway, it sounds like the bottom line is we need to wait, but it might be something.
I can give you an update in February.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Let's add it to the agenda.
All right. Jose and then Mike.
Can I know to what extent the consultants will be drilling down to the actual components, the cost per component? That I think that would be helpful for us to say, okay, what does CT, you know, the tech center, the HR Phoenix, what are the components that are being paid for and who's receiving that service? For instance, HR, are there all those FTEs direct services, or are there some general infrastructure services?
And I don't know that we have had that detail, or perhaps that's very difficult to drill down to say, okay, so we're paying this amount of money for Phoenix, what are those specific services? You know, who's receiving that service? And that, I think, we always have wondering, you know, is this something that the court is receiving, and is something that is necessary for other components, ancillary benefits?
So Phoenix staff? All the Phoenix staff are 100% dedicated to trial court support in some manner. Because only the trial courts are on Phoenix. The appellate, JD, nobody else is on Phoenix.
And actually, for Phoenix Financial, we want them to, because all 58 of us are on there. It's really the HR component that creates the potential inequity in terms of, and whether or not it's worth the money. Mm-hmm. So I think we just wait until Jody, the consultants, have more information and then see if we need to look at it again. But it was one of those areas where it did look like we could potentially consider it as we're looking down the line. That's good to try to figure out where, you know, more ongoing savings. Okay.
And just to qualify that as it relates to Phoenix Financial, we do also provide some services that are ancillary. They're not to all 58 courts, and so therefore they're charged for that. And that's about $107,000 for
the data entry piece and things like that.
That's right.
Mike, did you have a question or comment?
I think Colin answered my question. The other part is, I mean, I think we experienced this locally, trying to figure out, you know, kind of on that network support piece. You know, how much of that is allocated to this group, that group, that, and it's, you know, the question is whether, how much money we're talking about, whether it's worth the
Worth it.
Well, that, somebody was going to say, I can believe nickel size and quarter that up in serious money after a while, but, how much is it actually involved, and whether it's worth it, it's worth waiting to hear more.
Any other thoughts on this, or do we have a motion regarding recommendations 1, 2, and 3?
I would recommend you hold off on recommendation 2, just because we haven't discussed that one yet, and there's something else to discuss as relates to that. There's two options, if you'd like. Okay. So for recommendation 2, we actually provide two options, and I'm going to provide a little extra context for this one. We already provide the context regarding the deficit. Now we're also going to provide some context related to something we just discussed about the governor backfilling our revenue shortfalls. So over the past 4 years, and you'll see on you'll see this on page 61. You'll see a table 2, that's a decrease in the TCCF revenue that supports base distributions. And what it displays is that over the past 4 years, on average, we've seen a $26.4 million decrease, or about 4.8% decrease in those revenues that support base distributions. This is only significant if the governor decides to no longer backfill that revenue shortfall. And the reason why we bring this issue up is in the context of does the subcommittee want to consider establishing a fund balance floor to enable it to address any kind of funding shortfalls, whether it be related to revenue or other, so that instead of allocating reductions immediately to the courts during the course of the year when it's more difficult for the courts to effectively and efficiently operationalize those reductions, provide a year's worth of funding so that the courts can then plan for those reductions. And one way or milestone or marker to base this on would be, what are your changes in revenue over time that you can base it on? And if that revenue changes by that amount, are you prepared to address it? So we bring that up just as a consideration. Obviously, currently the governor's including a backfill for the shortfall, revenue shortfall. Our understanding is that that's going to continue for 16-17. So this is not necessarily an issue for now, but it's potentially for 17-18 or potentially, say, when the Prop 30 money stops. So this is just, again, something to consider, because recommendation 2 relates to items that aren't restricted by statute or aren't specifically appropriated. And so these items can be adjusted.
And remind us when Prop 30 stops.
2018-19.
Is that right,
Zlatko?
And has there been any dialogue about making it permanent or extending it?
Oh, they're trying.
Do we have a date?
There's groups who want it dedicated to health and education. There's folks who want to just continue. No one's going to say it's continuing. They're going to say it's an opportunity to reinvest with a revenue stream that's been fairly steady. But there's different people have different calls on it.
And what is our percentage? I mean, how much of our revenue would we lose if it either gets dedicated to something and doesn't include us, or if it goes away?
And again, it depends on what it is that the administration. This would be, you know, at some point be the tail end of Brown, and the incoming is the new. And so, where and how Prop 30 will end, and where we'll be economically.
Sure, right.
And
but okay.
One more complicating factor is how Prop 2, the state's rainy day fund, would interact with that. There's lots of different moving parts to the overall sort of future budget circumstance. So to say what share we get is whether or not we're in.
No, what share have we traditionally? You've looked at our revenue decrease. What's our
4% is, I think, this year's what it's been the percentage.
Okay.
Didn't I read also someone's trying to talk now about getting an initiative to get it on the ballot?
There's folks who are writing it to
extend
it. Health and education. And so they're going to be dueling continuances of Prop 30 in some form or fashion. Different impact on the general fund. But currently Prop 30 works so that it's really benefiting the general fund. Realignment revenues removed, it's complicated, whereas you can do it in a way that even though your bottom line revenues don't change, how it gets treated within the state's allocations could take away the amount of discretionary general fund we have, even if total revenues aren't changed over time.
So, Colin, refer us to the page that will reflect number 2 and show us the dollar amount that we have some discretion to adjust if we choose to do that.
So as relates to detail for recommendation 2, you would look at pages 63 and 64. And then as relates to the recommendation 2 itself and the options which we provide, there are 2 options. The first option is basically approve the allocation amounts that were approved for 15-16. And the second is modify those, but without any recommendation as relates to what amount you would adjust any or all of those programs. And that recommendation is on page 65, and the rationale is on page 66. In addition to that, we did actually ask the programs that would be impacted under recommendation 2, those programs that are not statutorily restricted, we did ask them to provide descriptions of the impacts on their programs if they were reduced pro rata based on that $8.3 million deficit. So we, based on the size of the program, we just reduced them pro rata by that $8.3 million. And those descriptions of the impacts were on pages 89 through 91.
And we're trying to give you some context here and some forward, you know, we'd like to try to get away from just budgeting each year and have some sense of how we want to deal with things in the future and bring you options to consider.
And basically, there are 5 programs we're talking about. We're talking about jury. Jury is the biggest one, $14.5
million. Right.
Criminal justice realignment, $9.2 million, just recently appropriated. Just I think that was in 11-12. Self-help centers, and this is only the component that hasn't been allocated to the courts ongoing. There's $3.7 million that was already allocated to the courts ongoing. We're only talking about the one-time reimbursement amount, the additional $2.5. Replacement screen stations, $2.3 million, and L reviews, which is
$332,000. So a quick way to look at them is 6364 that says recommendation 2, right?
That's right.
That column. That's so right. A really easy way to look at those programs.
But it's only those 5 that you just went through that we really have any discretion over?
Those are the only 5 that we really have any discretion over. Those are the reimbursement items. There are 2 other items, but they're relatively small that relate to Program 30, and that's the Revenue and Collections Program, previously known as Enhanced Collections Program, and the Children in Dependency Case Training. But we didn't actually ask. I don't believe we asked for any comment related to those. We only ask for comment related to the reimbursement programs.
The 2.5, which I think you said at one time for the self-help centers, all of that money is used to
the it's used just as the rest of the self-help money is used by the courts. So it's just like the money that the courts receive from the state trial court improvement and modernization fund, it's about $5 million. So in total, the courts receive about, I think it's $11.2 million for self-help. This, the identity of the $2.5 million, does not need to spend the rest of it.
Is money that's there in the year just unallocated?
Right, it's just allocated one time. Just like the IMF money is allocated one time to court. It's not something that's in their base allocation.
So I guess the underlying question is, do we want to do anything about this now? I mean, we don't have to do it for the next fiscal year, but we have to do it for 17-18. And so the question is, do we want to start that conversation about what we might do as we get to 17-18 and if we can chew a bit off the top?
David, I think the impact of all of these programs all the fact that I'm I think going to what Judge Good's question was about what we're looking to see fiscally could influence the decisions that we make as it relates to this. So I
February to talk about it, see what's in the governor's budget?
Yeah, I think we should do that because if you look at the column for 16-17, doesn't include an increase in the governor's budget, if even just assume a 5% increase, that takes care of the problem right there.
No.
It takes care of the bottom line.
It's a wash.
It would be allocated to the courts. So it would be so just like this year, we have the $9.6 million in unallocated money. Per judicial council policy, that money has been allocated using the WAFA methodology. So it's received and spent.
The reason I like David's suggestion is
it could be part of the, as we did was we reduced the 22.7 off of the 90. That's where you might have that
dialogue.
Yeah,
that first before we allocate.
We only allocate that because we really are. So this is how we're going to absorb those that reduction. So that's where you start to think about how you might see that of that year's increase.
And Sherry, I would want to note that we do mention in here as it relates to the floor, at least, not necessarily deficit, but the floor. So one option would be to not allocate new funding that you receive, that a portion of that you hold for, say, 2 or 3 years to build up that fund balance, and then you allocate it to the courts. So the same would be for the deficit, is you could not allocate a portion of it permanently, like you did for the 22.7, as Sabatka was saying.
Well, I think it's a good idea to wait until February. We all agree. It would be helpful to have more information about some of the programs in the recommendation as well. For example, the revenue we've been collecting for so long now that if there was something we were going to look at, it might be that we want to say, do we really need to have experts? I don't know if that's staff reports that have to be generated or if it's really just to assist course. I know Mike does a good job assisting other courts, and it could be that there would be other ways to do it.
My understanding is the big report that we have to submit every year. We just got one.
$125,000, though, that's a lot for one report.
No, it's not. I mean, there are statutory required work. The report is one of them, and they do assist courts.
But that's my point. Sometimes we might get away from that model. If we have expert courts, that could be the same thing for a lesser extent. You know what I mean?
And all of that, I think I said it last couple of times, that the allocation is still $1 million, and we use staff and the manager and sort of supervisory work.
Well, and every so often when the governor has an amnesty program, we need to have staff that can monitor that. That's a lot of work that we would not be able to do, and the courts can.
And they're heavily involved in the revenue distribution training that all of your courts and benefits from on it.
That has been really good training.
So that's their, they are doing that. Yeah. And they work with courts and work with the SCO.
No, I get it. It's just that I think that
another good reason to wait until February is we'd want to understand more about what the programs are and what they're paying for and how many people and whether it's something that could be done another way, just like we have on IMF. And if the answer is no, then that's good for us to know because I don't know what these all cover, right? So it's yet again another reason we should wait until February. And maybe you could work some recommendations on what it would look like to have a floor. You know, like if we went with a 1% floor, or we'll know more in February about the governor's proposed budget in January.
Right. Well, I mean, we did work up that. I mean, basically one scenario we did work up was, or one that we felt was appropriate, was one based on changes in available funding, which is at $26.4 million. So that was the scenario we worked up.
Although there's no detailed information provided, it actually wasn't part of the IMF survey. If you look on page 97, it was included as part of the survey on all the programs. Of course, there's a lot of feedback on that program. Page 97, line 24.
97,
line 24.
For collections, okay, meaning all of them are going to be there too. So the for example, if we look at the self-help, well, that would go both ways. Okay.
Colin, anything else on item 2 or 3?
No.
Any questions for Colin?
So to recap, recommendation number one has no impact on the Transport Trust Fund and their, right?
So recommendation one is either programs that have either statutory designated revenues,
right,
they're appropriated a specific amount,
right,
or they have no impact on the Transport Trust Fund balance.
So do we have a motion on that recommendation?
So the only thing that I noticed is one of the programs that is within this program 0140010 that we might have discussion over is the children dependency training. So if we're going to come back and revisit that in February, should we revisit the whole thing? Because we might want to get more information about what that is and whether or not we're going to continue with that program.
I saw that as recommendation, children and dependency training. I thought that was 2. It is 2.
Oh,
it's not 1.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Okay. But if you want to look at the programs as a whole, I understand that as well.
So do we have a second to David?
Second.
Any objections? Any favor?
Would you have known your Green Bay Packers socks if they lost yesterday?
I actually picked them out in the dark, but I thought that was a sign.
Sorry, we had a side conversation. Does anyone oppose? Okay, recommendation 1 is approved.
Can I make some notes? This shouldn't affect your decision at all, but on page 64, if you look under the program 30.15 program, the first 6 or 7 program, the Transport Budget Advisory Committee supported the recommendation of the Joint Ad Hoc Working Group to move that to have the governor propose that to be moved to state Transport Funding Corporation. So it may not actually be a program 30.15 when you see the governor's budget in January. That's why I think.
You want a bottom line recommendation number 2, since we've agreed not to do anything yet in terms of.
This is your subcommittee.
So would that be 2A?
Yes, that would be 2A. And then we could always adjust it if that.
And we'll look at it again in February.
Right. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. And 3, Colin.
Do you want me to recap 3 or?
Yes.
Okay, so 3 is that for the jury reimbursement expenditures, if the expenditures exceed the allocation amount, that after year end, there's a
judicial council staff make an adjustment so to ensure that each court receives the same share of the allocation as their share of the statewide allowable jury expenditures.
Oh, I did have a question on that. And you do that based on the pro rata formula?
The pro rata formula, in the sense of they would pro rata receive the allocation as compared to their pro rata share of the, yes.
So it's probably the simplest way if there's any funding left over, but the reason it probably is not the best way to do it is because the pro rata assumes that all the counties are having the same percentage of jury trials, and that may or may not be true depending on the county's jury trial, right? So I would wonder, we collect jury trials. Don't we have statistics on jury trials?
Yes.
It seems to me, wouldn't that be a more equitable way to look at a percentage of the number of jury trials and the percentage of theirs to the total and then apply it to the amount of money that you're going to be distributing? Because the courts are losing money that are paying for their jury trials if they're not reimbursed, and it's jury trial expense.
So I think this is intended to, I think, address that issue, because what it does is, regardless of the timing of it, if your court has more jury expenditures at year end, we're going to make an adjustment to make sure that you get your fair share. Well, not first, but at year end. But you will get your fair share. You'll get your share of your, if your expenditures are, say, $5 million and the total expenditures were $20
million, right.
And so that's 25%, and you're going to get 25% of the allocation.
Okay, so that's what I was talking about pro rata. I thought you meant pro rata in terms of the historical funding method and not the...
No, pro rata as in pro...
And then I'm good.
It's actual expenses.
That's right.
Pro rata, yeah.
The jury trial isn't a... Number of jury trials isn't exactly...
Yeah, number of jurors is better.
We just went through analysis, for some reason I'm seeing the ink. We had to bump up the number of jurors or something because for some reason, jury trials, their request for demand for panels.
Yeah, went up. But number
of jurors. And another thing that I think we need to check into, we're starting to observe an impact of Prop 47, the change in the composition of felons and misdemeanors, and seeing more trials and more jury trials in misdemeanor cases. And talking with some other courts, they're starting to see that too. So I think we should stick to what our actual cost
is. Pro rata based on number of jurors called, that's the better method. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
That's what we're doing.
The number of jurors called instead of the expense?
No, I'm just saying the actual
thing. Okay. And that's based on the number of jurors called, yeah. Okay, that's
based good. Based on purely expense, that number of jurors called.
Yes, and not based on the pro rata historical funding.
Right.
Perfect. That was my question. Okay. All right. So do you have a motion?
I've moved that.
Second.
Okay.
Rebecca Ponte moved and Mike Pettit second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Okay. So the next item on our agenda is item number 3. We're getting into the IMF fund, and we're going to talk first about the survey results that were sent to the trial court, is it Lucy?
Yes.
You want to come on over?
So the survey material start on combined page 92. So what we did similar to last year is we sent out a survey to all the trial courts asking for their input on each of the ULEP programs this year. But we added an additional question this year, which was to ask if IMF, question 7, if IMF funding were eliminated, how likely is it your court be willing to pay for this program or service, which is a question we did not ask last year. So when we compile the information, if you look at pages 95 through 97, what we've done is we've summarized the responses for you and sorted them by statewide average and by total for the court directly receiving the benefit. So the first chart will show you the responses sorted by statewide average regarding the benefit the court staff, the program provided to the branch as a whole.
What page is that on?
That's 95.
Then 96 is sorted by total for courts that responded to say they directly received a benefit from the program. And then the third chart is how courts rate that the benefit they provide to the court, not necessarily the branch as a whole, sorted by the average statewide. So then we provided to you, similar to last year, a summary for each program, which gives you some additional information. It provides you with all the comments the courts provided as part of their surveys. It also includes the responses to question 7, because we couldn't think of a way to summarize that in a comprehensive chart. There's no way to compile that data. So if you want to know if courts feel they would like you to fund it, you're going to have to look on each of individual programs page. And same goes for any comments they provided. Again, they're all itemized individually, and they're the 30 to 40 pages of the report that follow the summary of information. Pretty much it. Questions?
Great. Any questions? So what I wanted to do is just run through the various programs and see if you all have any questions about what they are. And I'm thinking it might be helpful if we worked from the chart on page 97. Do you think benefit provided the court by cluster statewide average? Everybody okay with that? Yes.
I noticed that no one of these programs was benefited more than 49 courts. Was only 49 courts responded?
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So, Zach, if we just kind of run through these various programs real quickly, and if anybody has questions about what they are or how courts utilize them, we can go through that.
I think that's it. That way everyone knows what we're looking at.
And the description for these programs are where, Lucy, do you remember?
So there is a small description within each page of the survey.
Okay.
So they try to
okay.
More like in the full description. Do
we know from which cluster we did not receive the 9 that did not respond?
No,
I was just curious if they were all within one cluster. I would be interested to know if they were overall 4 clusters.
You know, we're all
good. Okay, thank you.
So was there
on page
71
for a full description? Or is it, there's also some at the back starting on page 187.
Okay.
Well, at least that's the IT stuff.
I think that's all we got.
So, and this is the order of value or benefit. Last year when we started talking about reductions, we did start at the bottom of the list, those with the least benefit and work up. But for purposes of understanding what the programs are, if we could just start at the top and kind of work through and see if anybody has any questions. So we have self-help centers and Just Stop Me. If anybody doesn't know or wants more information on what these are, traditional education, judicial performance defense insurance, Phoenix, statewide support for self-help programs, Treasury services, budget focused training.
What is the difference between self-help centers and statewide support for self-help programs?
Yeah, we get money both from the trial court trust fund side. My recollection is from the trial court trust fund side as well as the IMS side for self-help. And I'm not really sure there is a difference. I think they're both allocated to the trial court.
to you, Jody. Does that sound right?
I'm not clear on that.
Let's circle it because we've got judicial counsel staff ready to answer the questions. So let's circle the ones we have questions on.
I can give you
okay.
So if you look for self-help number one on attachment 3F, there's prescriptions on combined take 105 and 106. That's $5 million that every single court gets a share of to help defray their costs related to running a self-help center. The statewide support for self-help programs, that description is on 100. And that's a very limited part of money. I think it's like $20,000. And that's for documents related to self-represented litigants.
Page 100.
Okay, page 100.
I believe it's
$20,000. Well, we have it on a spreadsheet.
$60,000 in 1560. So the self-represented electronic forms that fall court are available to three federal courts. The allocation this year is $60,000.
I think this one is more referring to statewide support.
This is the $5 million, though. The statewide support is the five is the $5 million. The document, I saw that on a different line item. Yeah, there you go. Yep, that's it. Okay, so that was the 60, and then 5 is the 5 minutes. Yep. We did not touch, just good since you're new to Arnie, we did not touch anything related to self-help last year because we knew it was very close to the hearts of our legislators and the governor. So anything related to self-help, we just passed.
Budget-focused training and meetings, telecommunication support, is that where I'm at? Statewide multidisciplinary education, litigation management program, essential court personnel education, senior faculty, essential court management education.
Two is traditional education.
Yep.
And then you have all these other education programs. I'm wondering if the people filling out the form knew what all the differences were. Just how should I? The survey had a link to a description of each of the programs so you can see if you weren't clear. So there was a box that would be taken to explain what they were. Okay. Some of the folks did that, listening.
No, we do. I would think that most CEOs were involved in it and would look at the description. Did you? Rebecca, you looked at the link. You know what they were covering.
Of course I did.
Yeah, so I'm assuming, yeah.
Practically speaking, the point you make, these surveys, the CEOs handle these surveys. They're the ones who respond.
I think they did. Yeah, collected material and responded, along with their staff, right? And
right.
Talking to the PJs if there are priorities there, too, certainly.
It's hard to connect what we had filled out because there are very explicit questions that were asked.
For each funding code, yeah, for each program.
Line 14, trial court labor relations, academies and forums, court interpreter testing. Was this one we asked to be shifted to?
We did. We asked for it to go to 4545 or court central office, and I think we were told no.
I think the council said there was not authority to do that.
Right.
On this one, I think that this was specific to what the budget language is about, what it can be used.
Okay.
Yeah. Allegedly, for the 4545. Yeah, you're talking about.
Historically.
Yes, our very.
How about historically?
I'll get off my perch. Yes, historically, our interpretation of 4545. Okay.
Well, the shifting to 4544 was the domestic violence forms related to interpreters. That was the shift to program 4545. This was the shift to general fund.
Yes, for the court central office, where we were told no.
There is no money. Superior Court audit program, uniform civil filing services,
trial court's transactional assistance program, distance education, courts technology center, CCPOR, regional office assistance group.
That was shifted and came back.
CCPOR.
No, regional office assistance
okay.
group.
Juvenile law, practice resources, statewide support for collections programs, data integration, trial court workload study support, domestic violence forms translation. We tried to shift and we're told we didn't have sufficient authority. Trial court procurement, self-help document assembly programs, order debt task force, enterprise policy planning, interim case management systems, B3. No questions on any of the other ones? Anything else we need to know about these programs, anybody?
Do you want me to go through the list of all of them, or would it be helpful for us to go through the ones that we did identify as core central office, or is that not material? Okay, done now. Yep.
What if we could, maybe before we break, get the fund condition statement for the IMF? Revision that's a revised that's being distributed.
Correct.
And if we could try to send that to, email that to Judge Herman, who's on the phone, I think that would be helpful. Do we have any other members participating by phone today? All right. I will note, just for our housekeeping records, that Judge Lee is present, and so is Brian Taylor.
Correction, the fund condition statement is on page 4, not page 3.
Okay, new, that's the new handout?
And my apologies, this is Judge Herman, for not being there in person. I actually broke my foot in Kauai a couple of weeks ago, so I'm not real mobile right now.
No problem.
Attachment 4A1 and 4A2. So that'll be pages 1 and 2 of the handout.
That should be coming to you, Judge Herman.
I got it.
Thank you, Judge Earl.
Attachment 4A1 and 4A2 outline the IMF expenditures and any remaining encumbrances for fiscal years 12-13 through 14-15. All the expenditure and encumbrance data is as of October 30th, 2015. So it's possible that those numbers may have changed between October 30th and today. Additionally, these tables display the council-approved allocations, which will be in column J for 2015-16. It
also displays the projected savings. That's in column L. Those numbers are uncharacteristically low when we look at historical numbers. Right now, the finance office is projecting savings of around between $1 million and $1.5 million. That may be low as well. If we look at the three-year historicals, that number has been in the range of around $6 million is the three-year average. We'll have a better idea of what savings are likely to be come February of next year. Attachment 4.2, which is the second page, displays all of the estimated costs by program for fiscal years 16-17 through 19-20. It's broken down into four scenarios. The biggest difference between each of those scenarios is telecom support costs. So the variations that you see in the bottom line totals are due to telecom support, which, as everyone knows, is the biggest driver regarding the ending fund balances as well.
This is 126, right? On page
2. Yes. Before I move on to attachment 4, B, are there any questions regarding 4A1 and 4A2? Or, Stephen, did you have any add-ins?
I just want to say two things. One is that this attachment is the same that you found in your material. The only difference is that some of the expenditures in column B through G were understated for some of the programs, so we adjusted it to reflect their actual cost in prior years. And the other difference is that we added scenario 4,
right, yes,
which is related to what the IT office will be talking about in terms of leasing switches instead of delaying replacing them after their scheduled replacement date.
The numbers you have here, for example, scenario 1 after 2016 to 17, that includes combination of encumbrances as well as the estimated spending in the current year.
Are you on page?
On page 1.
So for the scenario 1 estimates, those totals are based on the office's provided projections, their need estimates. For scenario 1, 2, 3, and 4, we got in touch with all the offices and asked what they thought their needs would be for fiscal year 16-17 through 19-20.
And after lunch, I believe Mark Justin will be here, and we will kind of dive into the telecommunications report and the various estimates or scenarios.
Okay. So the funds that we continued for a year, are they included in here for consideration as well, or they're dropped out, and this is what was left after that first year?
You mean all of our decisions should be here, so the programs we eliminated are gone.
Correct.
Okay.
And the things that we said we'll fund one time but have been told that there's no other funding alternative have come back.
Okay. That's what I want. Okay. But anything that found something else or that we didn't continue?
We're not that lucky with that, but we have very few homes for it. There were no takers for our expenses.
Shall I move on to 4B?
Thanks. Okay. 4B is, which was updated actually yesterday. It includes all of the options or the scenarios for telecom support. The newest addition is scenario 4, which, as Stephen mentioned, is the lease and finance options. You'll notice that based on the different pro rata reduction approaches, the range for each scenario, we try to get as close as possible to $700,000 and $3.7 million. Each scenario assumes a continued annual decline of approximately 5% through fiscal year 19-20. What differs between each of the scenarios is whether the rollout of network switches, again, that's telecom support, is done according to the suggested replacement date or delayed by up to 2 years. So, in essence, it would be delayed 2 years, possibly beyond their expected life cycle.
Scenario 4, again, is which IP will refer to as their option 3, the lease option. It is a one-time lease event, and the goal there is to avoid any delays in the replacement of equipment. Any questions? Or?
Sure. Yeah, I went to Mark. I just had a question on the lease option.
Yeah, I think that's really detailed.
Just one thing to note on attachment 4B. If you look at column C, row 21, right now we're projecting the ending fund balance at the end of 2016 is about $8.9 million. That's probably conservative. We probably, if revenues continue just a slight decline, it might be a little higher. We'll have a much better idea in February, for sure, in terms of what other additional savings offices are projecting. But I would say that's probably the least you can expect as part of the, it might could be a little higher, maybe 500,000, maybe a million higher, possibly. So we'll know better in February. And you might want to take that into consideration. If it does come higher, then our target reduction becomes lower.
Right. Good. That's good news.
Any additional questions or?
Nope.
Attachment 4C, please. So that'll be the fourth page, which is the fund condition statement. Provides the estimated ending fund balances for 15-16 through 19-20, based on current projections, which again we're assuming a 5% annual decline in revenues through 19-20. We're expecting a range of negative fund balances depending on the telecom support scenarios between negative $2.4 million and negative $16.7 million. You can note those in line 21. It should also be noted that addressing, I'm sure Stephen has probably already mentioned, that addressing the negative fund balance for 16-17 does not address, in most of the scenarios, the out-year negative fund balances, and you can see the range there in row 22. Again, each of the variant scenarios, scenario 1, 2, 3, and 4, are in line with the variant scenarios for IP. So option 4 or scenario 4 is the leasing option. Scenario 3 is the replacement of, I believe, 422 network switches. Scenario 2 is the replacement of 536 network switches. Again, network switches relating to telecom support. And scenario 1 is the replacing of all network switches so that there is no delay in their replacement cycle.
So at the end of the current fiscal year, the fund balance is reflected on line 21?
Correct.
But we still are overspending as reflected in item 22?
Correct. Again, that is, I don't want to call it IT's worst case scenario, but that's their most expensive scenario, which is a $30.5 million in 16-17 for the telecom support program.
No smoothing, no...
Correct.
No
correct.
It's what based on the life cycle of the people.
It is to purchase all the equipment up front, switches up front, and to roll them out on schedule without any delay so that there's no reduced potential failure. There's always potential failure if you replace them on time, but to replace them on schedule by the schedule that we have.
Not a lot to digest.
One suggestion for this, this is to help you understand the dilemma you're facing. You might want to wait until you come up with some preliminary recommendations about 16-17 and figure out whether or not you want to start addressing the future of your problems, or you can start tackling them now. It's a little bit more hard because you don't know what the problem is in out years if you don't come up with a solution for 16-17. But even if you did, I think control you can address it. So based on 16-17, you come up with zero fund balance. What would the problem be? Negative fund balance that they would still need to address.
What
was under any scenario, what was the range?
Oh, it's negative $2.3 million in long-term cuts and negative $13.7 million.
So, like I said, after lunch we'll have an opportunity to have Mark Bestman here. And that's why we've asked Judge Slough and Judge Buckley to be here, who are chairs of the Judicial Council Technology Committee. And one of our CIOs, Heather Pettit from Contra Costa, will be here. And dive into these different scenarios and be able to ask questions and kind of flush out the differences a little bit. I don't know if this is a decision we can make today, but at least we can start.
Is the pitch getting old? I can't hear. I've got my hearing aids, and I can't see. in the future, you know, maybe a 8x14. Thank you.
Are there any questions? Because I'm thinking maybe this would be a good time to take a break. All right. We're scheduled to come back at 1 o'clock, but we'll try to come back at 12:45 if all of our folks who we need for the next item are here. So we will remute the phone until 12:45. All right. Thank you, everybody.